It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 354, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Men's basketball is struggling, and Matt and I discuss what factors are sinking this season, including culture, a tough schedule, and depth. Also on the show, men's volleyball, the college football playoff, and the lack of running back depth on the football team. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your sports news, BYU sports news, at CougarFan.com. Check us out on iTunes and now on Patreon at patreon.com/riseandshout, and listen to Matt and I talk right now. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, Matt, but apparently we need to see the YouTube show Cobra Kai.
Yeah, wax on, wax off, or whatever. I don't understand.
Yeah,
so I still don't understand what the excitement around this is.
I understand what the excitement around it is. It's Daniel's son. I mean, why don't you understand the excitement?
It just looks to me like one of those shows where all of the funny moments are in the commercial. You know what I mean?
How can you judge that by the commercial, though?
I don't know. I feel like I'm definitely judging a book by its cover here.
Well, I will tell you this. Have you seen the Holmes and Watson trailers?
Yes.
So what I've decided is if that's all the funny parts, then I don't need to see the movie because the trailer wasn't that funny.
Well, and if you looked at like the Rotten Tomatoes,
it got hammered. But I mean, the trailer wasn't very funny, right? If they can't be funny in the trailer, that's not good. But anyway, Chris Carter in a Facebook comment on our last episode says, "I just listened to the episode and had to make my first post to you. How have you not seen Cobra Kai? It is the best TV show I saw last year." Chris says, "You should be able to get a month free." Because I said I don't want, you know, like a couple weeks ago that I don't want to pay another streaming service to just watch one show. He says, and keep up the good word talking about BYU. Thanks, Chris,
and welcome to the tweet bag, my friend.
Yeah, first post.
At this guy, Chris Carter.
Yeah, and you can join the conversation.
Loved him with the Vikings.
Yeah, and didn't he also do? Wasn't he the showrunner and writer for X-Files?
Maybe.
Is that true?
I don't know.
If only there was some way to figure that out.
You probably watched a lot more episodes of the X-Files than I did. Cobra Kai, he says, is the best TV show he saw this year. Then here's what I want to know, Chris, because this begs a question for me.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And now you're going to have to come back for your second post to us, because I need to know this. If that's your best, I need to see your top three or your top five, because I want to know what other shows you saw this year, right?
Yes.
I need a little bit of context here. If he tells me, like, you know, that's his top show and he doesn't have a number two, or his number two is really lame, or his number two is a number three.
If his number two is season whatever of The Bachelorette.
Right. So if his number two stinks.
Oh, my gosh.
The jokes write themselves here. But if his number two isn't any good, then I'll know, right, that his Cobra Kai recommendation isn't as valuable. So I need – Chris, you have an assignment. I need you to come back with – you can give me your top three or your top five, but I want to show what – I need to know what other shows you saw this year that you liked. And if – and I'll take a look at that, and then maybe I'll be convinced to give this Cobra Kai show a shot.
So what were your best shows last year, Matt?
Well, so I was late on the bandwagon on a couple of shows.
It's fine. They don't have to be new, but what was the best TV?
Stranger Things.
Yeah, that's the top of my list.
I'm going to say, because I discovered it late in 2018, I'm going to count it, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I've not watched that one.
Hilarious. Sometimes I question whether or not I'm a good parent because I'm watching that together with my 14-year-old son. And it's a little every once in a while I'm like, oh, geez, that's hilarious. But can I laugh about that in front of him? But it's a pretty funny show. The Man in the High Castle. And no, yes. I don't need spoilers on any of this stuff, guys, because I'm really early still in Man in the High Castle. Stranger Things, I've seen all of them, so that's fine. But have you watched all of season two yet?
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. I love season two. I may love it as much as season one. I know a lot of people said, well, it's good, but it's not as good. I thought they changed enough while keeping it the same that was awesome. I thought it was awesome.
I don't watch a ton of TV. Off the top of my head, that's my top three probably.
Yeah, I would say Stranger Things for sure. Speechless, a comedy series. with Mini Driver.
Yep.
That one's a good one. I'm trying to remember because some shows that I really love, I don't think I actually watched in 2018. It might have been 2017. Like season two of Daredevil wasn't in 2018. That was amazing. I'd have to think about that. I'd have to go back and look at which TV series I finished when.
There were some shows I tried in 2018 and didn't like.
Such as the Jack Ryan Tom Clancy show.
I tried it. I got a handful of episodes into there and I couldn't. It just didn't grab me.
It was not my favorite. So anyway, let's move on, Matt, to the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, men's volleyball opens up this week.
Yes.
They are ranked number 5th in all the land. And they have quite a opening weekend at the Smith Fieldhouse. They'll play number 7. We're recording this on Wednesday night. They'll play number 7 Ohio State on Thursday.
Saturday they host number 14 Ball State.
So anyway, that'll be very exciting. Matt, you going to check out the Cougars this weekend, or you got too much else going on?
I'd love to do it, but Thursday night they're showing the basketball game on BYU TV.
Oh, that's right.
So I don't know how I have another option for watching it?
Can you stream it?
I don't know. Is there another service to stream it on? Because it's in Provo, right?
Yeah, they're volleyball schedule. Let's see it. It's Thursday nights. It's on the W.TV.
Excellent. So I can stream it. Because right now, if I had to choose between the two, I would probably choose to stream the volleyball game.
I totally would. Here's interesting. They're not on BYU TV until February 14th against Concordia, at least according to the schedule at BYUCougars.com. So that's kind of unfortunate, right?
And it's weird, right? You got two top 10 teams in volleyball playing against each other.
Isn't it like a tournament thing, right? It's not like just home games, or is it just home games?
I don't know, but if it's on the W, if it were a tournament,
that doesn't make sense either.
That doesn't make any sense.
That's unfortunate. I love watching it on BYU TV. But anyway, I will watch a bunch of their matches this year. That is for certain. They've got some good matches, and obviously 5th in the country, they have another chance to make a deep postseason run as well. So good luck to them. This weekend, regardless of where and how you can watch it. Matt, as far as Cougars in the pros are concerned, Michael Davis had a great game for the San Diego Chargers and will face, of course, the New England Patriots this weekend. He started cornerback, they have one of those, a couple of tackles, and then 2 pass breakups in the fourth quarter. So played every defensive snap. Also played a few snaps on special teams as well. So, like we said a couple weeks ago, Michael Davis making an impact.
And who called it? You did.
I did. I've been touting him since early on in his BYU career. So, anyway, that's it for Cougars in the News. Matt, we have an exciting announcement to make. Many of our loyal listeners have been around for a while, have asked questions along the lines of how can you support the podcast, besides, of course, maybe telling your friends and neighbors about it. And typically our response has been, you don't need to, it's a free podcast, we're never going to charge for it. But now we're giving everybody a way to support the podcast, Matt.
This is our gift to you.
Yeah, this is our gift to you to give to us. What? Does that make sense? We are now set up on Patreon, so you can go to patreon.com/riseandshout. What Patreon is, for those of you that don't know, it's a community where you can support artists. There are a few podcasts out on there as well, as authors and graphic artists and different things. But anyway, right now we've set up one level, which is $2 a month. Again, we're not telling you need to go out there. This is a free podcast. But if you feel that you want to support the podcast, what we would do with this money is mainly make ourselves rich. I mean, that's the goal here, is independent wealth. I would like to grow the podcast, and we would use this money to not just cover expenses, but also to advertise and try to get more listeners, because I think we have a decent product. But right now we have just the one level. We've got some exciting potential other things with some partners coming that may add to some other levels that have rewards. This $2 level is just you supporting the podcast. I think we provide close to $24 of annual enjoyment, Matt.
I mean, when you break it out by episode, I'd say definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, two or three stories about me getting the giggles a year ought to cover you there.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, we do typically four episodes a month, so you're really talking about a very small outlay per episode. But as I said, we're not going to hard sell and pressure this. We will mention it on occasion as a place to go, patreon.com/riseandshout, when we have new levels or new rewards that you can potentially unlock through different levels of membership there. We will talk about this, but it's never going to be a hard sell with us, because that's just not really our gig. But anyway,
and just to make sure that people understand this doesn't mean you don't have to sign up and pay that $2 in order to get the podcast. You're still going to be able to get the podcast.
Yeah, the podcast will be free through any of the services that you currently get the podcast through. This is really an opportunity for people to give back. If they so desire, and like I said, our goal with this is to advertise and get more to get more listeners and get it out there. It's a much more competitive environment to be a BYU podcast than it was 5 years ago, right? Or 8 years ago when we started, and it was us and Cougar Center, right? And that was kind of it.
It was the glory days, right there.
That was the glory days. We were in like the top, do you remember that? The top 20 sports podcasts on iTunes?
Yeah, it was awesome.
For a while.
Us and Cougar Center
both were in
there. Everybody, we had a blog. Everybody had blogs.
Yeah, we had a blog. We had,
We've been on like three or four different ones of those.
Yeah, and that was before there was no BYU Sports Nation on BYU TV,
yep,
right?
Yeah.
None of that, and there was no, you know, now the Des News, you know, has the Cougar Insiders one and stuff. So, I mean, it's proliferated, but I still think we
were pioneers.
We were pioneers,
and this is a good show.
Yeah,
we're glad to bring it to you because it's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. So anyway, that's that. So Matt, on that note, let's talk about men's basketball.
Yes. Oh no. Wait a minute. No.
Okay. So can I say something about staying up late?
Here we go, old man. What do you got?
Old man Mangum. Here's the deal. I do not want to stay up late and watch us get the crap kicked out of us by St. Mary's. Of all teams.
Nope.
Right? I mean, it's Matthew Dellavedova Garden Gnome Night, of all things, which makes it even worse.
Yeah, see, they did that on purpose.
Does he flip his little... Oh, of course they did it on purpose. There was no doubt that was going to be when BYU came to town. Did he like flip out his little mouth guard at you? The little gnome?
He shakes his little head bobbles.
Yeah, his head
and then
bobbles.
He flops.
Then he flops.
And then he falls uncontrollably to the floor.
And then whines about it to the officials. So we had a couple of different games. We had the Pacific game where we had a big lead. Then Pacific kind of made it a game, but got a win, and then just a really bad effort against St. Mary's. I'm not going to talk a lot about this because I don't think it's worth it. We've mentioned this in previous years. The officiating in these West Coast Conference games is terrible, and the Pacific game may be one of the worst officiated games I've ever seen. There were like 80 fouls between the two teams, and I'm exaggerating only a little bit there. And you know, that Nick Emery foul where he's clearly got about a foot between him and the guy that was shooting the three-pointer, it's pretty rare. Now, to be fair, if you watch the NBA, there was a ball that was saved. Was that against the Golden State?
Oh, that was awesome.
And the guy was like 2 feet out of bounds.
It was Durant. He'd made like 3 steps out of bounds. Yeah, he was standing out of bounds.
On color. Like uncolored floor versus the parquet color, right? Right. And then there's that now that's become a meme and all that stuff, but the James Harden like 4 steps back to take a 3-pointer, right?
The best was when Steph Curry did it and they called him for it and he held up a 1 and a 3 on his chest.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Like, and then he made a comment afterwards like, listen, I learned it from watching
I saw it on TV and thought this must be legal, right?
Yeah, I thought it was legal. Apparently it's not.
So to be fair, and Tom Holmoe pointed this out, there are no West Coast Conference officials, right? Like these are all just Western. This isn't like football where the conferences have all power, right? The NCAA and regionally have the power, right? And this is why Pac-12 games are also terribly officiated because in a lot of cases it's the same people, right? But oh boy, no,
but Adam, I follow the West Coast Conference officials on Twitter.
Yeah, did you see their response when people said they were fake? It was great.
So awesome.
So anyway, I will say this: I complain about officiating. I think officiating is hard, and unlike say the NFL where these guys. And the NBA, where this should be their only thing they do for a living and they're professionals, so they should be held to a high standard. These guys, it's less so, but they should still be held to a high standard. My problem is the inconsistency with these Western officials, because I think it's really unfair on the players. And again, I don't think that officiating was tilted one way or the other.
It's just wildly inconsistent. So how's a player supposed to prepare for that?
Correct. It just makes it hard to do. But anyway, end of rant on that. As far as the rest of this goes, Matt. Let's talk about some of the reasons why they might be struggling. At the Lawless Republic, there was offered up that the schedule might be part of the problem. So in this article by Sean Gordon, he talks about how this is one of the most road-heavy schedules BYU's had in recent memory, and that led to part of this issue was how many road games BYU had played since their last couple of victories against Utah and Utah State. So Matt, how much blame/credit do you give the schedule for BYU's recent woes?
I'm not ready to pin much of this on the schedule at all, to be honest.
Yeah, I'll pin a little bit. I mean, it's hard to be on the road a lot, but I think he pointed out. I think he pointed out in this article that the last time they had a schedule like this, or maybe this was it was the 2010-2011 season, right? And he points out, of course, in that time, BYU won all 8 away games. Or some of them were neutral site, but that's still away from your home, right? Now, of course, that team was led by a guy named Jimmer. And yeah, Jackson Emery.
Had a little bit of talent on there.
Brandon Davies, Charles Abuo, Noah Hartsock, and more. So let me ask you a question, and this is what I'm going to point at as the entire reason why we're not having a good season. Is there anybody on this team as good as Jimmer?
No.
Of course. That's a dumb question, right? Is there anybody on this team as good as Jackson Emery?
No.
Okay. Is there anybody on this team as good as Brandon Davies?
No.
No. Is there anybody on this team as good as Charles Abuo?
Probably not.
I think
maybe. You might be able to argue.
Yoli Childs is better than Charles Abuo. What about Noah Hartsock? How many players on the roster are better than Noah Hartsock?
There you go, right? Childs.
Childs and probably Hawes?
Okay.
Okay, so you got 2. Okay, how many players did I just mention? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 players on that team that were better than all but maybe one or two. So
we may not even have a guy on this roster who would start on that team.
I don't think we do. Childs wouldn't start on that team because they were so perimeter-based, and I think he would have come off the bench. But I think he would have been a really nice contributor on that team. And Hawes, I don't think would have started because defensively you had plenty of offense with Jimmer, and Abuo and Jackson Emery provided, especially in Emery's case, elite level defense, right? on the perimeter. And Hartsock was great, right? He did a lot of things. He was a glue guy, right? Did a ton of things. Could rebound when you needed to. Could shoot threes. All these other things. We don't have the talent that, and it's unfair. The 2010, 2011. I mean, that run with Jimmer was some of the best teams BYU has ever had. But my point being, we just don't have the talent. We don't have the depth. And we'll get to that here in a second. So I think that's a way bigger issue than the schedule. On that issue, we might have a guy transferring. Jashire Hartnett got pulled out of the starting lineup these first two conference games and barely played at all in the St. Mary's game and is apparently not practicing, though at least as of today. Dave Rose said he's not participating and is considering his options, but so maybe he's transferring, maybe he's not. Matt, what do you make of this Jashire Hartnett story? We'll get to some tweet bag questions here in a minute.
So it's not surprising that this would be on his mind. There was at least one report that said that he had kind of already decided that after this season he was going to go. But the mid-season departure would be a little bit strange, but for a guy who I believe was expecting to be a very significant contributor on this team and a consistent starter, to be in the role that he's in now, I understand where he's coming from in terms of frustration is concerned, and I think all of these guys are frustrated right now. I think the bigger question that this really begs for me, and I know we'll probably get into this, is this telling us something? Is this a repeat symptom of a larger problem inside the program? That for me, that's really the concerning piece of this. You know, an individual player's experience, an individual player deciding to move on. That is what it is. And you always, my take on that is usually wish the guy the best of luck. For somebody like him, I hate to see him go because I think he's a good addition to the team. But if he feels like he's going to be a better fit somewhere else and he's going to be happier somewhere else, he should have the ability to make that move. But in the bigger scheme of things, is this just another one of these telling us that there's something wrong inside the program?
That's a great question, Matt. So let's jump into the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
What was that?
I don't know. I just kind of like my voice cracked a little bit. Apologize.
Yeah, that's all right. Your voice cracks all the time. Robbie King on Twitter, that's RBKing303, says, could Harden leaving end up... Well, actually, I'm going to come back to this one. I should have done this the other way around. David Welker on Facebook says, I do not recall marquee players leaving before the drama, hype, and ridiculous expectation of the so-called LP3. Seeing Chapman, Bryant, et al. Leave is disheartening, and I can't think it is unrelated. Is the heir apparent to Dave Rose now sitting on the bench? That's kind of a separate question. But when I posted this article, too, we had people, Brian Taylor and others, saying, well, gosh, all these people have left, right? Is this common? Is this a symptom of something, Matt? And what's your take? Is this a symptom of something?
Yes, I think that it is.
A symptom of what, though? Like a program in bad straits?
It seems like it's a culture issue, right? And we went back to talking about this when Mika left, right? Everybody talked about the chemistry, right? And it was like, oh well, now you kind of got the feeling with players talking was maybe not everybody was saying that they didn't like playing with Mika, but there was something wrong with the chemistry, and it got better, and maybe some of it had to do with the way the scheme changed, right? When he wasn't on the floor anymore, and so it may not be a personality thing per se, but there was something going on there where people just weren't happy with their roles, weren't happy with the way things were working in the program. But then since then, we've had this whole run of these. And you would have hoped that at this point now, because you feel like we're kind of coming out on the other end of the LP of the Lone Peak 3, which is kind of when this all started. But here we are again.
Yeah, here we are. Here we are again, indeed. It's frustrating. People transfer in college basketball, right? And people transfer often when they don't get the playing time they thought they were going to get when they were recruited, right? The number has been, I think, a little higher, and that's been documented in a few articles and things that it's been higher than it probably is typically. The Elijah Bryant and Mika decisions are weird because they're not transfers, right? They decided to go play foreign ball and make money. In Bryant's case, I think he already had a degree, right? I mean, I think he had graduated, if memory serves me right. Mika, I don't believe, had. It's not... I still, to this day, they can make whatever decision they want. I still think in Mika's case, I don't understand it. Yeah, you could go make some money overseas, but, I mean, playing, it was the same thing we said back then, is it just seems like me, if that was the decision that tons of good college basketball players were making, then Mika's decision would seem typical, right? But there aren't a bunch of good college basketball players of his level walking out of the NCAA to go play in Europe, right? Like, that's not a typical...
It's not a common thing.
Bryant's, right, to me, feels different. But the question becomes, are people fleeing the program because the culture is broken, right? And it's not fun to play at BYU. That's a problem. If that's the case, that's a big problem. I don't know if it's the case. I've heard some reports where reporters seem to indicate that, and others where they say that's bunk. People like to play for Coach Rose and his staff and those kind of other things. But in the end, if you can't keep good talent, now imagine this team. We talked about this a few weeks ago. What does this team look like if it's got Mika and Elijah Bryant on it?
Oh, man.
It's a tournament team, maybe, right? Certainly not a middling West Coast Conference team, right? Which is what we're like now.
Right, but if you go back to where we started this conversation, right, you take those two guys. Those two guys maybe – those two guys get significant playing time on that earlier team we talked about with Jimmer and Emery and Davies and et cetera, right? Those couple of guys break into that.
I think Mika might be a better player than Davies was.
Okay, so there you go. Now, so it might not mean this team would be as good as that one, but this would be a tournament bound team for sure.
Because they didn't Jimmer was otherworldly, right? I mean, so probably not that, but certainly to your point, it would be a tournament bound team.
And there's something to be said for the fact that winning is fun. Right, like
this is why you've got
players that leave New England, right? But you have football players that leave New England because they feel like Belichick's crazy. I don't want to play with this guy and all this. But the people who stay, they love him and they love the way that he runs that program, even though it might be a little intense because they're winning. Right? You can't run a team like that and lose and get people to stay. And maybe, I don't know if it's a great example, but you look at like what this team is going through right now, and I don't know that Rose is running his program that way, right? But I'm just trying to talk about a concept here. Players are willing to put up with all sorts of stuff around culture, the way a program is run, the way they're treated by coaches, whether or not they get along with their teammates in college, how well they feel like they fit in on campus, and all those things if they're winning ball games.
Yes, for sure.
And in this case, they're not winning ball games. BYU can be a little bit of a weird place.
It can, for sure.
And there is, I don't know what level this is at, but guys, there is obviously something going on inside of the basketball program.
Something is awry.
Something is making people feel uncomfortable.
Okay.
And you got all the weird Nick Emery stuff. There's a lot of weird stuff going on.
Well, okay, let's get to that for a second. Because from a basketball standpoint, I've seen a couple of people responded to me on Twitter, like, what's the big deal that Harden leaves, right? And we got a question that's along that lines with Robbie King that I started to read before. So Robbie says, could Harden leaving end up being a good thing for the team? I'm hearing rumors that he may have had contention with some of the other guards. I have no idea if that's true. Also, this really opens up some room for Nick Emery. He should be playing significantly more minutes than he has been given. So let's talk about Hartnett's play so far this year. Okay, according to most advanced statistics and traditional ones, he is the third best player on this team. Okay, fair enough?
Yep.
Okay. That's with Emery, of course, having only played in 8 games and been fairly limited in minutes in the 8 games that he's played. If you were drafting a basketball team today from BYU's roster, if we were each drafting, who would you choose first for the rest of the season, Jashire Hartnett or Nick Emery?
Based on the data I have in front of me, I have to take Hartnett.
No, I'm taking Emery. His potential is way higher. Hartnett is a very limited player. And to Robbie King's point, we're going to be a mid-pack West Coast Conference team with or without him. Now, I don't want him to leave because we don't have the depth to absorb the loss. He's a good defender, and we don't have anybody, I think, on the roster that can do what he did. But in the end, the result's going to be the same. We might make the NIT. Right? But at this pace, I don't know that the NIT is a given. Right?
Oh, at this pace, no. I don't think that it is at all.
So, but what?
But, I mean, I'd ask you this question: does Nick Emery bring you 30 points a game?
No. We don't. We've only got one guy on the roster that could bring you 30 points a game.
Does he bring you? Okay. So does Nick Emery bring you? I mean, how many points a game do you think he brings you? I guess is my question. 20?
Scoring or
15?
like overall, what he adds to the team.
I was thinking scoring, but I'll back up to the way that you want to look at it. So overall scoring to the team.
He averaged 16 as a freshman. He averaged 13 as a sophomore. Okay, I think he's a guy that if the offense was built around him, he could probably do around 20, maybe low 20s. I think on a good team, he should be averaging somewhere in that 14 to 15 point range. And doing so efficiently.
And so, and how much of that is incremental to what the team is getting now? I guess that's really the question, right? Because if you're trying to decide Hartnett versus Emery, you've got to believe that there's incremental points out there or incremental wins out there that Emery brings you with the increased playing time, and that's why you're going to trim back Hartnett.
I believe that would be true, yes. Hartnett... Until this year, he's been much better this year. Hartnett had been a offensive negative last year. He was not a good offensive player. He's been much better this year. You know, he's a good defender, but he was not an offensive positive last year. So Emery has, for all of his other flaws, always been at least an offensive positive, right? And he's had some amazing games offensively. And as a freshman, I think we all thought, this guy's going to someday be one of the all-time best scorers at BYU, right?
Yeah, I think we definitely thought that.
He scored 16 as a game as a freshman, the sky's the limit. The guy could score 30 points a game, right? Probably not that high, but we thought that it was up. It has been all down, and this year he hasn't played that great. He had a decent game against St. Mary's and a terrible game for the team, so who cares, right?
Right. So, I just feel like I hear what you're saying, but I feel like if it's a trade-off, if I'm being asked if I'm comfortable, if I view this as a trade-off, because this is now going to give Emery a little bit more time, and that Hartnett's leaving because he was having issues with the other guards, and he saw the potential of a diminished role given Nick Emery's return, and I'm making that trade right today, I don't know that I'm happy with that trade. Giving up a guy with 19 steals on a team that was, I feel like, struggles defensively. Those woes are only going to get worse. I don't know. I don't know. That's tough.
Yeah. I mean, you look at all the transfers, Hartnett, if he leaves, Harrison, Chapman, Toulson, Nielsen, Calvert, Carlino, Bartley, Lloyd, you know, and that does include obviously Elijah Bryant and Eric Mika. Some of those players I was sad to lose. Some of them, I don't know that it mattered much. But if you look at that 2011-2012 team, the year after after Jimmer left, right? They were 26-9, okay? 12-4 in the WCC. I think that was that our first year in the WCC, right? But anyway, they were and the best player on that team was Noah Hartsock, okay? And like I said before, I don't think, or maybe it was Davies, depending on how you look at it, but Hartsock was amazing that year. He had a really good year. And you had Davies as well. But here's the thing. You had Abuo. You had Carlino, the aforementioned Carlino. Rogers, when he was healthy, was quite good. Nate Austin. Brock Zylstra. Tell me who on the roster, once you get past, include Hartnett in there, once you get past, and this is a team that is not considered maybe one of the best all-time at BYU, who on that roster, on our current roster, besides Hawes and Childs, gets playing time on that team? Anybody? Yeah. Nobody, right? Hartnett doesn't get playing time on that team.
Nope.
So again, the problem, I'm not saying there's not a cultural problem, because these two things could be very related. We have a talent problem. There's not enough talent on this team. And a couple of these guys, younger guys, may turn up to be part of the next good BYU team, because I think a couple of the younger guys are good enough. But, you know, this Lone Pete 3 thing was an absolute disaster for BYU. The whole thing has been a disaster. You know, it has been, right? We've got NCAA sanctions. We got 2 years out of Mika, the best of the three. And Emery has absolutely disappointed. I think Haas has been fine. He had a sophomore slump, but he's having a good year this year. And if BYU was good, the story would be about how great of, you know, he had a sophomore slump, but is putting in his best basketball. You know, but no one's talking about that, because who cares when you're 9-8?
So, yeah, nobody cares.
So anyway, Kelly Rogers asks, what is wrong with the men's basketball? He says, and football teams. I think the football team, we've talked about this. I'm more worried about the basketball team program than I am the football program. Matt, what about you?
We've had some pretty painful years in basketball, guys, and I do not want to go back there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think your point's correct. Like, the football team has shown some signs, some sparks of life. I look at what we're dealing with in basketball right now, and I don't see much as giving me hope for the rest of this season or the season after.
So Matt, earlier this year, I was optimistic when we hung on there with Nevada, and now we get blown out by, quite frankly, a mediocre St. Mary's team. This is not. The Dellavedova jokes aside, this is not Matthew Dellavedova's St. Mary's team.
Well, and letting Pacific get back in it. What was that all about?
We have, and they talked about this in another article on Lawless Republic, we've been terrible with runs. Again, that's another poop joke right up your alley. We have had a hard time.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We give up a lot of runs, and then we end up not being able to generate runs. But anyway, it's
both,
not a...
Both of those things are a problem.
Both of those things are a problem. They don't... There is not a... Right now, this team, defensively, it's well documented. We've talked about it. They're terrible, right? And offensively, they have some strengths, but we're so bad at shooting three-pointers that if we get in a hole, it makes it difficult to come back all the way back, right? And we've had a couple games where we fell down and we came back close. UNLV, we tied it, went to overtime. And San Diego State, we couldn't quite get back, right? But those were the wins you needed to potentially be a bubble team. And we didn't get any of those wins that we talked about, in the preseason. We needed a couple of those wins. We didn't get any of them. And to the contrary, we lost to some teams that we had no business losing to. So, Wade Hillam asked this on Facebook. Who is the vocal leader of this basketball team? With only one road win, and barely doing that after blowing a 20-point lead, who is the guy on the court that gets after it and rallies these guys when their backs are against the wall? So, Matt, looking back at some of those teams we mentioned before, Jackson Emery was a guy like that.
Yep.
Hartsock was a guy. I don't know if he'd get after people, but he kind of led by example. I don't see anybody on this team that does that.
No, there isn't anybody on this
Haas
team that
might
does
be that. The closest. I've seen him kind of not get in people's face, but kind of do
he
the
He gets fiery, though. He gets fiery.
Emery's not that guy. I
yells abbreviated swear words at the crowd. I mean, Haas gets fired up.
Yeah, for sure. I love that meme that then showed Whittingham, son of a something. But anyway, it's, you know, it was also on that 2011 2012 team was Anson Winder. Remember Anson Winder?
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah. Lots of
what you wouldn't give for somebody like that on this team.
I don't know, man. It's been a rough season.
I would take him on this team all day long.
And that was what was that Winder's that was his freshman year. So not it wasn't even him at his best, and he was still better than a lot of the folks that we had here. But he would really blossom a couple years after that. But anyway, so Matt, let's talk about football a little bit. We talked about it briefly. James Impey was named a freshman All-American at center, and I have to say I think that's well deserved, and I think I've got high hopes for Impey as an offensive lineman at BYU going forward.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about MP going forward. I think there's reasons to be excited about the offensive line going forward. They're doing some good things. They showed some good flashes this year. A lot of youth.
Yeah.
But clearly, you know, when you got a guy playing a crucial line position like that, who looks that good as a freshman, that's always a good reason to be excited.
Yeah, for sure. Also in news from the football team, Dallin Hulker, his dad announced via social media that he will be going on a mission. So good luck to Dallin Hulker, and we'll see you in a couple of years, buddy.
Yeah, that's exciting. It's good to it's good to see. Good for him. And one thing I will throw out there on MP is I believe MP just got married on January 4th.
Oh, well, I didn't realize that. So, congratulations.
Congratulations to apparently several of the players got married the first week of the year. But
makes sense.
You get engaged, you're like, well, we got to wait till the season's over.
True, and they made a bowl game, so
yep.
You know, you can't get married during bowl season. And on the unfortunate side of news, after those two fortunate sides, Isaiah Armstrong and Riley Burt are transferring. Two very different stories. I think Isaiah Armstrong wasn't likely to play much. I think Riley Burt actually had a shot, but maybe his feeling was, I've been sitting here for 3 years waiting for my shot and haven't gotten it yet. So, and he's doing, you know, the graduate transfer thing. So he can, of course, immediately go and play someplace else. Matt, big deal, no deal that Riley Burt is transferring.
Big deal. Who's left?
Squally.
Squally's done. Squally's done. Hadley's done.
Hadley done. Will be the running back. What?
Done.
They both
done.
Graduated?
Everybody's gone. Oh, Ula Tulatau. No, wait a minute. No, he's not with the program. Okay.
Katoa. Yeah, and this is a problem. We were already concerned. You expressed it pretty strongly in our season recap show a few weeks ago that running back depth was a problem, and Burt was one of the reasons I felt like maybe we'd be okay. If you had Katoa and Burt, I think you could build a running game around those guys. Yeah, you need some more depth because people get hurt, especially running backs get hurt. This is a big deal. That
they've got to go get a JC guy. Like they're like you. I don't even know what to say. I mean, who's going to play running back? And like seriously, like who are we going to give the ball to?
Well, and they're going to have to look at potential position switchers like they did with Hadley.
Yeah,
you know.
You got okay.
Is there a linebacker that's going to be a backup and or even maybe a defensive back, one of the bigger defensive backs who may not be factoring in because even if they go get a transfer, Matt, they already needed to get that transfer, right? To add the depth, they need another body beyond that, right? Or two, and quite frankly, I was thinking. Before he decided on his mission plans, that Hulker might be a guy that could fill in as a, as an H-back type, right? Because, you know, he's not as big as Bushman, right? And not that he would get a ton of carries, but it might take a little pressure off, right? And certainly could be in there to block. And then you lose El Bakri, too. We didn't even talk about that, who was often in on key downs when you needed somebody to block when, they thought there'd be pressure on the quarterback, right?
I'm telling you, you're looking at, like, Kafensis.
Oh, yeah, Kafensis is definitely going to get a look, right? He has to. And Bo Hodge has got to get a serious look, too, right?
Maybe Bo Hodge.
How confident are you on either of those guys? I like Kafensis as a runner. I think he's pretty
decent. But he's not going to be like the...
No.
I don't think he can be a feature back.
No. But, I mean, he's tough as nails, man. That when he does that little wing tee thing and then is the lead blocker, I mean, I have to say, the couple of plays they ran this year, and he throws legitimate blocks, man, right? Like, that's not... I like Kafensis from a toughness standpoint. But like you said, you're not going to get him 15 touches a game, right? But maybe he'll prove us wrong, or Bo Hodge. But I'm worried about running back depth. I think they need more than just a good JC transfer. And Katoa's got to stay healthy, right? Or you're really in trouble.
I'm just running down the roster, looking at what, and I don't know.
It's bleak on the running back side, and that is curious to me. Is like I feel like this was Burt's chance to play, right? Like the door was wide open. And before anybody starts tweeting at me, the whole thing was a joke about Squally and Hadley. I hope people realize that, right?
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So anyway, John Brame, that's at Johnny Dangerman on Twitter, says this, and this is related to the running game and may be very related, but he talked about, he says, Clemson basically abandoned the run during the national championship game because it wasn't working and the pass was. Should BYU do the same next year if and when the run game gets stopped? # climb on in. Matt, I don't think BYU can be successful if they don't. In an individual game, I think that works. I don't think it works consistently game to game. You're going to have to run the football, right?
Yeah. So you got to look at that and understand the difference between tactics and strategy. Right, so let's think about that for just a second here. Just go on a little journey with me.
Oh, look at you! You have a master's of business administration, don't you?
Oh boy, here we go.
Nice, nice.
Excellent. Yes.
MBA.
So, at MBA school,
at
I was
MBA
taught.
MBA school, I took a class. All right, go ahead.
Okay, in all seriousness, so what you saw Clemson do against Alabama. Yes, it was a strategy for that game, but it was over the course of a season. You have to look at that as that's a tactical decision that you made. You didn't sit in July and say our offense is going to abandon the run. Right? You looked at the matchups against Alabama. You saw that you had a receiver that could basically catch any ball thrown within 20 feet of him. Like, what does the guy got? Like go gadget arms? Like he got everything. What
it
was his name?
Amazing.
That number 8 kid? He's
yeah,
a freshman.
Yeah, he's a freshman.
He was. That was unbelievable. First of all, okay, and I don't think we have a receiver like that. Okay,
they have 3 wide receivers that will play, will be fairly early draft picks, and will get a chance to be number 1 or number 2 wide receivers in the NFL. So
I love Zach Wilson, and I think Zach Wilson's going to be very good. But their freshman quarterback is better than
yeah, he's not Lawrence. Yeah, Lawrence, okay. I think Cliff Kingsbury was hired by the Cardinals because they're already tanking to try to draft Lawrence. It's the only explanation to hiring a coach that was, quite frankly, very mediocre in college, right? Like, oh, let's start tanking for Lawrence. Yes. Yes,
trust the process.
Trust the process. All right, go ahead.
So, if the question here is, should BYU in an individual game – where they are having trouble executing the run, but they have an advantageous matchup that will allow them to pick a defense apart? Yes, absolutely. And that's what you saw Clemson do. They had an advantage that allowed them to go after what is historically a second-rate Alabama defense. This is not the best defense Alabama's ever put out, right? It's not as good as the defense that they had on the field last year. And they had an advantage. They had better athletes and better schemes. So that's what they did. In an individual game, if BYU sees that, absolutely they should abandon the run. But I don't think – I'm not for wholesale just saying like, hey, if you're having if you struggle running against a team, stop it and throw the ball. Because that is not always the answer. It was the answer in that particular game. It's not the answer for every game that Clemson played this year, and it won't be the answer for every game that we play next year. It could be the answer in individual games.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And we have the personnel where, depending on the matchups, we might have that. With Zach back there, healthy Gunner, and some of these other things, like we might have that. There could be a game where that exists for us. And it's a ton of fun to watch, so I hope it happens.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. Anyway, we missed one tweet bag question from Justin Sweeney. On basketball, but I think we answered your question about unity and all that stuff, culture with the basketball team. But he had another one, which is, can we move Clemson and Alabama to the NFL and let the real college teams have at it in 2019? Hashtag tweetback. Matt, I love watching historically great teams. I had this discussion at lunch today at work with a guy who's like, I don't watch college football anymore because it's boring that Bama and Clemson are always the teams.
Yeah.
I don't follow that philosophy. That's fine. He can stop if he wants. I love watching great teams, and I got a kick out of a little bit of Alabama getting their teeth kicked in by Clemson, right? Because Dabo Sweeney's just easier to like, right? Like, I just think they should stop doing sideline interviews with Saban because I just feel bad for the sideline reporters every time. But what did you think of the college football playoff? I mean, I get the games weren't close, but that doesn't mean the system's broken. And you should scrap it or go to eight teams because a couple of these games weren't close. I mean, you are going to have not close games, right, sometimes.
Yeah, but that's silly, okay? Like, let's go back and actually look at this for a second. That's a tagline. That's a thing that people say because it's the popular Debbie Downer, hipster, millennial, whatever thing it is to say, right? Like, I liked that band before they were cool. Like, Let's actually look at numbers here for a minute, okay? Because this math actually is not hard. The game we watched the other night was a blowout. I will give you that, okay? Some people are finding some satisfaction in the fact that Alabama got their teeth kicked in. Some people aren't, whatever. But blowout, Clemson just looked really good. They showed up better prepared, and they had better players. That's how you win football games, okay? Guess what, everybody? It has nothing to do with what seat you were sitting in, okay? That's how you win games. 2017, Alabama-Georgia. Two SEC teams in, everybody complains, blah, blah, blah. We had a 26-23 football game that went into overtime to decide the national championship in a 4-team playoff. Now, granted, I want an 18 playoff, but guys, how many years did we all whine for a playoff? And then we were gifted this championship game for the ages the year before that. Yeah, I know, it's Alabama, it's Clemson again, blah, blah, blah. But that was a 35-31 ball game. That was a contested game between probably the two best teams in the country, ranked number one and two, that won in a playoff. The year before that, it's Alabama, Clemson again, boring. No, it wasn't. It was a 45-40 ball game.
It was an amazing game. It was an amazing game
to watch, guys. That the college football gods have blessed us with this beautiful thing. Now, yeah, it's not perfect. Yeah, I would like to see them go to eight teams. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But this year, had they gone to eight teams, likely we still would have gotten the same game, guys. But what are you talking about? Boring, the same two teams. First of all, you go back to the 2015 and 2018 teams, the players are all different. Yeah, you got Coach Saban, and you know, I hate him and all this. But it's largely different players. The skills players, the moneymaker guys, and well, the non-moneymaker guys at the college level.
Right.
They're all different players. I mean, it
is. They're Bama. They're making some money under the table.
It is the definition. It's not under the table. It's in their shoe.
Yeah.
But you guys, these are good games. These have been fun, phenomenally fun games to watch, with the exception of two games over the past 5 years, past five seasons that were kind of snoozers. right? The Ohio State-Oregon matchup wasn't as exciting. And the other night, like, it was a blowout, but it was fun to watch Clemson put on that clinic.
Oh, I thought the game was still fun to watch, and it was in doubt into the third quarter. I mean, Clemson was in control, but you kind of felt like at some point Tua was going to go off, right?
And Tua thought so too. He threw that pick six. He didn't even blink.
No.
There's going to be a lot of points tonight. We'll just have to go.
Let me say this: Lawrence is a future NFL star. Tua doesn't play in the NFL, right?
Yeah, Lawrence made himself a lot of money.
Lawrence is, and I get it. He's got those great wide receivers. And all that stuff. But Lawrence, like, I'm just sitting there going, oh my gosh, like, whatever NFL team lands this guy, they've got the next Peyton, right?
It doesn't matter whether or not Tua is actually successful in the NFL. For his sake, I'm not sure that it matters. Because people are going to look at him, and I think Baker Mayfield will kind of give some people some hope. He's going to get drafted, and he's going to make a ton of money.
Oh, he's going to make a ton of money. I just don't know, you know... Herb Street pointed it out really well, is Tua does not – he got fooled on things that NFL quarterbacks, that NFL defenses do all the time, which is disguising the coverage, right?
Yep. Yep.
And Tua, I think, you know, I don't know that Tua – maybe he can make those adjustments. He's a sophomore, right? Like so the book is not written, and as a college quarterback, he's amazing, right? He was – a legitimate Heisman Trophy runner-up. That was real. This isn't Danny Werfel here, right? He wasn't just the quarterback on the best team in the country. He was amazing, right? But you know, anyway, I'm with you. Your whole rant is right on point. These three games happen to not be that exciting. I think the playoff has more than delivered its share of exciting games, and they mean something, unlike most bowl games, right? You know, there's the drama is who's going to win the national title as opposed to who's going to be the Sugar Bowl champ, right?
And the other thing is this: like, if you want to see other teams in there, these other teams have got to win games. I mean, we've had 10 different teams get into the playoffs. Four of those teams have been in once or are 0-1. Right?
Right, right.
We've got a couple of 1-1 teams. We got Oklahoma at 0-3. Like, other teams have just got to win games. You want to see other teams in there. Like, we're not going to put UCF in there. Like, they're going to lose. Like, other teams have just got to get better.
So Matt, you bring up UCF. You sent me a text that with the picture that Darren Revelle of ESPN had tweeted out about odds to win the college football playoff next year.
And love it. This is our gambling segment. This is great.
This is our gambling segment. 500-1 odds that BYU wins the college football playoff. So you're saying there's a chance.
Get your bets in now, guys.
Get your bets in now. If we all pool our money, we can lose it together. UCF and Boise have the same odds as us. So why is that?
Isn't that fascinating?
Well, it's easy, guys. It's this whole stuff of access that the anti-independent crowd has, right? You have a chance at the college football player. You do not. UCF won how many games in a row?
Like 30. I don't know.
And they have beat and then lost respectively to two really good teams when they played. I mean, they've been a legit team. Like you said, I don't think they deserve to be in the top four, but both of those years they make an 18 playoff, right? Legitimately, yep. They make an 18 playoff, right? They were really good teams. These UCF teams, we shouldn't discount them. Quite frankly, they might be better than any, except for maybe one BYU team.
Well, and,
right, those two teams. So the point being that UCF and Boise State, who've had much more success lately than we have on the football field, have no greater chance at the college football playoff than we do. According to Vegas.
And I'll even go a step further, okay? So basically, when you look at these odds, you got the top few teams, and then you're kind of broken into tiers. You got a few teams at 50, a few teams at 80, a few teams at 100, a bunch of teams at 200, a bunch of teams at 300, 13 teams at 500, a whole slew at 1,000, couple at 2,000, couple at 5, and some at 10,000 to 1, like for real. Okay, so that's where the odds. So they're down in these tiers, okay? And BYU is in this, I would say, you know, bottom third.
And by the way, the Virginia Fighting Mendenhalls are in that same tier with us.
So, and now you're going exactly to my point. If I go to the 13 teams, there are 13 teams that are 501 odds. And let's just run down this for a minute. BCS teams, Virginia.
BCS teams? You mean
Power Five. Yeah. Virginia, Kansas State, Kansas, NC State, Boston College, Louisville. Okay?
It's like now half the ACC.
Now you go to 1,001, and you're going to get the rest of the ACC here. Pittsburgh, Georgia Tech, Duke, Maryland, Minnesota, Colorado, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Arkansas. These, granted, this list I'm reading to you now are all teams with worse odds than BYU, according to Vegas.
And okay? Kentucky this past year. Keep in mind, Kentucky had one of their best seasons
ever.
Yes. And their rate, they're lower, not because they're a worse team. It's because what would they have to do to get into the college football playoff? They would have to win the SEC, right? So what these odds are communicating is Vegas does not believe there's a snowball's chance in Hades that Kentucky can beat Georgia, LSU, Auburn, and, of course, Alabama.
Even with this Snell Jr. kid who's probably – I'm going to go ahead and just say he's the best running back to ever play football at Kentucky, and that's going to be true for the next 100 years. Right? And you got who else here? Ole Miss, Arkansas, Wake Forest, North Carolina, Indiana, Vanderbilt, San Diego State, meh. Rutgers, do they really count as P5? Illinois, Oregon State, Nevada, UNLV. Those last five teams I mentioned are 10,000 to 1 odds. Being in a P5 conference does not give you any additional access to the system. Winning games gives you access. That's what Notre Dame did. Granted, they also got in there a little bit on tradition and brand, right? But they won a bunch of football games this year. You know, UCF has won a bunch of football games too, but their problem is they're not playing anybody, right? So
yes, if UCF had had our schedule, if UCF had our schedule and been undefeated,
they would have won eight games.
Yes, that's fine. That's fine. They win. I think they win 9 or 10. But if they had our schedule and they go undefeated, they're in the college football playoff, right? Or they're at least sitting on the sideline because you happen to have, you know, the one loss, you know, these one loss conference champions, right, of the big conferences. But you're in the discussion. They were never in the discussion this year. Right, because they didn't.
Nobody on that committee was seriously. The words UCF never came out of anybody's mouth in those meetings.
No. And that's no disrespect to them. They had a very good team, but they.
And you can only play the schedule you have. I get that, but if you're UCF, you got to take the 2-for-1 with Florida. Like, I know you hate it. I know you don't want to do it, but you have to do it. We do it. I don't like it that we have to do it either. But like, if you want to play those games, that's how you get access. Being in a P5 conference, like where did Utah fall in on this list, right? Everybody wants to compare us to Utah. Utah falls into this list at 80 to 1 odds, okay, which actually is not terrible.
But that's because the Pac-12 has no Alabama in it. That's
right.
The reason,
you know how
right?
far you have to go before you find – you start at the top of this list. You know how far you have to go before you find – okay, so you've got Alabama and Georgia.
LSU, and Auburn.
So there you go. You got some SEC teams up in there.
But only four of them.
Right.
After
you know where
that,
most of the SEC is, they're in the 500 to 1,001 categories.
Yeah.
Like, you can't – yeah, I think people grossly misunderstand what it means to be in a conference or in a P5 conference, right? Like look at Utah, for example. Let's look at the season they had last year, because they went into – and I'm only using them as a comparison because they went into a conference the same time we went independent. Like – They're gonna piddle around in the middle of the Pac-12, and every 10 years they'll challenge for a Pac-12 title and maybe get into the conversation for the playoff.
Right.
Like,
but they weren't. If they had won the Pac-12 championship this year, they weren't getting into the playoff.
No, they weren't gonna get in.
Right. And that's the again, you know, if they expand the playoff, it changes things substantially, right? Because you could do a 16-team playoff, which if you really wanted to turn things on their ear. You would give the conference champion of every conference in the in the FBS a seat in that playoff.
I think you'd get massive realignment if you did that.
Massive realignment, right? Because awesome. Because at that point, if you're Kentucky, you go, huh, you know, I like the money of the SEC, but what if I could win a national, you know, get into the playoff? Now, they're not going to leave the SEC, but Big 12 teams might, right?
Where Big 12 teams could switch. Pac 12 teams could switch.
Yeah. You know, no one's leaving the SEC or the Big 10, right? Because the money is too good. And that might be true of the Pac 12, too, depending long term how it goes. But it would change things, right? It would change how you scheduled, too, you know, because you're going to need some, you know, some out of conference games if you want any of those at large bids or whatever else. But anyway, well, we are over time at this point, and we did not talk about the NFL playoffs, which a couple of people have asked us to do. So briefly, Matt, let's run through those games and see who you've got for the NFL. So let's start in the NFC. Who you got? Let me see. I'm pulling up the games here so we can look at the odds on all this stuff. Very exciting for the listeners. But Matt, who actually, let me put it this way: is there, to your in your estimation, do we have a great team this year? Is there a team or a couple of teams here that you say is a great, historically great team?
Okay, historically great, maybe not. But I really like the Saints.
Yeah, I like the Rams quite a bit too. So let's start in the NFC and talk about that: Cowboys and Rams. Who you got?
I think you got to take the Rams there. Yeah, Rams. I don't think the Cowboys have the horses to Rams. Slow those guys down.
Rams, kill them. Saints and Eagles.
Didn't the Saints already throttle the Eagles once this year?
Yeah, well, Nick Foles, he's like magic. Foles is magic. I'm taking the Saints.
You know else is magic? Drew Brees.
Yeah,
Drew Brees. The guy's been doing it consistently forever.
That's true. So it's the Rams and the Saints rematch. Who you got in that one?
I'm taking Saints. I know everybody's in love with this Rams coach, but come on, Sean Payton knows what he's doing.
Sean Payton is that guy, like, just 10 years down the line, right?
Yeah, with a bunch more experience and better players with more experience.
And Taysom Hill. He's got Taysom Hill. That's the difference maker right there.
And I'm in a postseason fantasy league, right, which I've never done before. But the strategy basically I've taken here requires the Saints to get to the Super Bowl. So right. Let's come on.
Good for you. In the AFC, Colts and Chiefs. Chiefs win by a lot, right?
Yeah, Chiefs win by like 100.
Though Luck is playing really, really well.
Yeah, but his luck is about to run out.
Oh, you're terrible. And the Patriots and Chargers.
I have nothing I can say here other than Pats.
Chargers are going to win.
You Pats have got playing well. Are you kidding me?
I am not.
Seriously?
And this
you
isn't
think
some...
Belichick's going to lose to Phillip Rivers,
yes.
Quarterback by accident?
Back by X. Stop it. Rivers is pretty good.
I see the video that Melvin Gordon posted.
Yeah,
and he was in an Uber car and the driver didn't recognize him.
Yeah, I did. That was pretty amazing.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Yes, I think the Patriots go down. I think Josh Gordon was a massive blow to their chances. Changes that offense.
Unfortunately, my fantasy strategy is kind of built around a Saints-Patriots Super Bowl.
Well, good luck to you on that. So then the AFC Championship for you would be Pats-Chiefs rematch. Who you got?
I'm taking the Pats, baby. That's what my heart's saying.
Chargers-Chiefs for me, and I'm going with the Chiefs. So that'd be the Chiefs and the Saints for me, and the Pats and the Saints for you. Who you got?
Patriots. You hate the New England Patriots.
I love the New England Patriots. I just don't think this is their year.
Patriots, baby.
I'm gonna be wearing my
Kyle Van Noy jersey when they win it.
Cool. I'm gonna go with the Saints this year.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
So we'll go with the Saints. Anyway, we'll probably spend more time on the NFL next week. But I thought that was gonna be this week too, and we ended up chatting about other things, but it's all good.
Well, we kind of got into it with the college football system there.
Yes, you did. You went on a classic rant.
I had some feelings.
Hey, I'm the guy that rants here. You step off my ranting, all right, buddy? You leave the rants to me.
I apologize. I apologize for my ranting, everyone.
Yeah, you leave the ranting, incoherent ranting to me, all right, buddy?
Sorry, my bad.
So anyway, we'll be back next week to talk probably more hoops, how men's volleyball did in their first weekend against some highly ranked opponents. And the other thing we're going to do, and I don't know if it's next week or in a couple weeks, we got a really cool email from Ryan Crockett that we have still yet to read. But basically, we are going to do that episode on the college sports Dante's Level of Hell. And but I don't know if we'll get to it next week because we got to do some prep for that one because we got to make it good.
Yeah, I need to go get the cliff notes of the book, review that again because it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, but it'll be fun. But maybe next week or maybe 2 weeks from now, we will do that. Well, thanks.
The Rise and Shout Podcast Book Club.
The Rise and Shout, that would be a new one. That would be a new one. You don't read.
Book Club?
That's not true. You do read.
Books.
You know, you'd be suggesting like strategy business books, and I'd be like the latest fantasy by Brandon Sanderson, which you probably don't even know what I just said.
I only know his name because you talk about him constantly. I read a lot of Curious George too, yeah, so I'm going to go that route.
I'm more of a Gerald and Piggy guy myself.
Last couple days been a lot of Curious George and Dr. Seuss. I don't know what it is.
We have the entire collection of Gerald and Piggy. Do you have those books?
Mo Willems? No.
He's the guy that does The Pigeon Drives the Bus. But there's a whole series about Gerald and Piggy. It's an elephant and a pig that are best friends. I can't believe we're talking about this.
Oh, yeah. I know this.
I love those books. But anyway, you know, if you're going to have to read a bunch of books to your kids, they should be at least somewhat entertaining, right? For the adults.
I hear you there.
Anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. As we mentioned before, you can check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/riseandshout. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!